The 4th District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has reconvened. The Honorable Thomas M. Harris presiding.
Good morning. This is case number 4-24-1627, Ingrid Gardner versus City of Loves Park. Counsel, could we have appearances first for the appellant?
Yes, hi, Thomas Sotos on behalf of the City of Loves Park, the defendant appellant.
Thank you. And for the appellee?
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Rasak on behalf of the appellee, Ingrid Gardner.
Thank you. Mr. Sotos, you may proceed with your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel, may it please the court, good morning. My name is Thomas Sotos. I represent the City of Loves Park, the defendant appellant. Today, we are asking the court to reverse the lower court's finding that the application of the deliberate encounter exception was a question of fact to be resolved by the jury, and to rule that as a matter of law, the exception does not apply, and the city owed no duty of care to plaintiff Ingrid Gardner. Now, as the court likely noticed in their briefs, the parties frame the sole appellate issue differently. I would like to begin with that divergent framing because I think it demonstrates why, ultimately, this is a fairly simple appeal that should resolve just as simply in the city's favor. So the issue presented by the city is sort of the standard binary legal question. Did the city owe Ms. Gardner a duty based on whether, as a legal matter, the deliberate encounter exception either did or did not apply? It's a yes or no for this court to answer. That's how the city frames it. Now, plaintiff offers some argument about this, but it's not her preferred framing. Plaintiff would prefer the court not reach this question and instead decide, as the lower court did, that the deliberate encounter exception presents a question of fact for the jury to decide. That's her issue presented. So why does this matter? On the city's framing, if this is a legal question, it resolves in the city's favor. And plaintiff simply does not oppose this with particular vigor. In our opening brief, the city advanced a surfeit of authority, namely three decisions. That's Winters, Crespo, and Davis. We argue that those decisions compel a legal finding that the deliberate encounter exception does not apply to this case. As we note in reply, plaintiff declined to address even one of those cases in her response brief. So we make an argument about concession, but here's the larger point. Plaintiff is inclined to avoid this merits question because it clearly and simply favors the city. Hertz, which we submitted recently, it's the court's most recent pronouncement on the deliberate encounter exception. It came down from the 4th District last month. It demonstrates why this is the case, and it demonstrates it in abundance. There, as here, there was no economic compulsion forcing the route taken. And there, as here, there was no evidence that the plaintiff deliberately encountered the open and obvious defect for any reason other than convenience. That is not enough. Convenience is not enough. The court held there, the court should hold here, where an alternate path in the form of a grass parkway is readily available. The deliberate encounter exception, it does not apply. So plaintiff's counsel understands that. Plaintiff's counsel is a good lawyer. That's why his hand is somewhat forced here to argue the first order question, whether this is a fact issue for the jury rather than a legal issue for the court. Here's the problem with that framing. That question.
Counsel, how do you reach the conclusion that it is only a legal question?
So
why don't the facts matter?
The facts absolutely matter. But the facts here are undisputed. This comes
Wait a minute. They're not undisputed. There's an expert that testified that it was reasonable for the person to do what they did so that they didn't have to cross the grass.
So the
original plaintiff's counsel probably could have prepped the witness better, but you're talking about an aged widow who says, I don't want to walk across that because the grass is bumpy and I don't want to get my feet wet, which the feet wet sounds like convenience. The bumps, which she, I don't know what she meant, whether it was a rise or rise and then a drop, whatever. Why isn't the jury entitled to consider that, given the expert's opinion as well?
Your Honor, I appreciate the question. I think there are actually two different answers to this. I think they're both correct. The first answer is that testimonial only came out at trial. And I'll make this point, and then I'll get to the second one. So the first point is, we, in our motion for directed verdict, different trial counsel for both counsel on appeal, there was different trial counsel. But in our motion for directed verdict and in our post-trial motion, we asked the court to reverse its summary judgment finding because it was a legal issue. And the only information available to court
How
at
do
the
you
summary
get to
judgment.
reverse a summary judgment after the case has already gone to verdict?
Well, that has to do with the fact that it's th th this is, I don't want to oversimplify it, but I do think it's simple. That's because the facts at the summary judgment stage were undisputed and it was a pure legal issue there. Now, the lower court found that it was a fact issue that should go to the jury. We believe that was a clear error and it was an abundant error. The reason is because what the court just noted, the testimony about the bumps and the wetness and the expert testimony, that wasn't in the summary judgment record. The summary judgment record was exclusively testimony from Ms. Gardner stating and conceding that she only avoided the grass parkway because it was more convenient to take the route that she took through the open and obvious dangerous condition. And she conceded, and this is an important point, that she could have walked through the grass just fine.
So
So
you
that was the only thing.
found other cases where you've had a denial of the motion for summary judgment, denial of JNOV, directed verdict, goes to verdict, plaintiff wins, and then the lawyers say, "Wait a minute, we want to go back to summary judgment." Explain that to me, because I don't think it's simple.
I can see that it's not frequent. I do think it's semantics. I do think that it's appropriate here. We cite a case in our brief called Brunchen. There's a number of cases start with the letter B and they can get kind of confusing, but the case I'm referring to here is Brunchen. And what Brunchen did, it was a very, very similar case to what we have here. That was an open and obvious case. It didn't actually come down to the deliberate encounter exception. And what the court did there is it went back and it looked at the undisputed record and found that it was an undisputed record, and as a result, it was a legal issue for the court to determine. Now, Brunchen doesn't specifically hold I don't want to overstate that the court can. It doesn't articulate it the way Your Honor just did, Justice Connect. It doesn't say that we go back in time and we throw out everything. But what Brunchen does say is where there are undisputed facts about a condition, it is a legal issue. And Mr. Ratzak raised in his response brief that there is an exception to the normal rule that where a summary judgment is denied and it normally blends in to the trial decision. That is the normal rule. But Mr. Ratzak raised the exception. Then we raised it as well by citing Brunchen, that where it's a pure legal issue, they do not merge and they are kept separate. And here, this is my first answer to your question. So here, the facts about the bumps and the wetness and the expert testimony, they weren't part of the record at the summary judgment stage. And because that was a pure legal issue, and it should have been adjudicated as a pure legal issue, because we don't dispute anything that Ms. Gardner said. I want to make that point very, very clear. What Ms. Gardner has said about the grass parkway in this case is our evidence. We are accepting it, and we are asking this court to make a finding that the deliberate encounter exception either applied or it did not, based on that undisputed record. So that's my first answer, that the court can and should, and we preserve this throughout our motion practice.
Undisputed, you're talking about the undisputed record at summary judgment stage, though, aren't you?
Yes, sir. And this is my second answer, because I do appreciate that at the trial stage, there was more testimony. Now, Ms. Gardner testified that she did not want to go through the grass parkway because she didn't want to get her feet wet. And there were little bumps. And then an expert.
Did you just say little bumps?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Did she say little bumps? Or did she say bumps?
I believe she said,
We'll skip that because that's in the record. Yeah.
it's little bumps. I just checked.
Okay.
It is little bumps. So we accept that. She didn't want to do that. And then there was expert testimony. Now we discussed this in the brief. The only thing that the expert testified to was that people prefer to walk on planar surfaces. The expert did not, and I want to be very clear about this, he didn't provide any expert testimony about this grass. And we cite a case, the name is escaping me, and I apologize, but there is a case in the brief, and it mentions that generalized expert testimony is not useful for determining these sorts of questions for helping a trier fact. And that's all this was. This was an expert who was asked a question and said, well, as a general matter, people prefer to walk on flat, planar surfaces. This is actually what led to some of the discursion in the briefs about the city of Park Ridge and whether you go through the grass parkways and the sidewalks and it's a different suburb. But that's kind of our point. There isn't any record testimony. There's no record evidence here. There's none from any expert about this grass parkway. So even at the trial stage, when the judge adjudicated the motion for direct verdict and then adjudicated the post-trial motion, the only evidence about this grass parkway was Ms. Gardner's concessions about avoiding it out of habit and convenience and that she could have walked through the grass, and then her trial testimony about little bumps and wedges. And what we are asking is the court to make a, we are submitting that that is undisputed evidence. It is an undisputed record. And the court can, should, and must adjudicate it as a matter of law because there is a legion of case law saying that this is a question about duty. And where there is no dispute about the actual physical condition of the subject property, here the grass parkway, and there is no dispute, the court is required to make a legal finding about that because it's a duty question and that's a question of law.
But all of this is, you're saying no dispute, but you're still talking about summary judgment. Because there is a dispute at trial. And you're also talking about the jury seeing the plaintiff. Now, is convenience different for a 21-year-old and a, what, 79, or I don't
79
remember.
Here, Your Honor. Yes. Yeah. I think it's
is convenience different? Yeah. Does it mean something different?
I appreciate the question.
To a jury, does it mean something different?
I think the answer is effectively no. I think Ms. Gardner is a sympathetic plaintiff. I have no ill will toward Ms. Gardner. I wouldn't have expected the jury to have ill will toward Ms. Gardner. What the case law teaches us is that where a person tells us, admits to us, and I would encourage the court to read Crespo, Winters, and Davis, and this court's most recent decision, Hertz, where the person tells us themselves that they're only avoiding an alternate path that is otherwise reasonably available out of convenience, where they concede that. That's not enough to invoke the deliberate encounter exception. I would note in Hertz, that's the court's most recent decision, and that is a Rule 23 order. I don't want to overstate it, but it is the most, for lack of a better word, most cutting edge law on the issue is Hertz. That was a retiree. I don't know her age. It's not in the opinion. But that was a retiree who also invoked convenience. Now, the difference in all these cases, to Your Honor's point, these cases were decided in the defendant's favor at summary judgment, and they were appealed by the plaintiff. We don't have that postural advantage here. But we do have the truth, the record. And I want to return to this to this expert. There was no counter expert testimony provided about the planar surface issue. There wasn't any opposing testimony provided about that. And because of that, we can't dispute what that expert said about general preferences for planar surfaces, because that is what the trial record said. That said, Your Honor, there was no testimony from plaintiff or this expert that this grass parkway needed to be avoided for any reason other than minor convenience. There wasn't any testimony about that. And I would submit that that's critical here, because plaintiff carries the burden on a duty question where it comes from, where it's a legal question. And because we are accepting all this evidence, we are submitting to the court that plaintiff has not and cannot sustain her burden to demonstrate the deliberate encounter exception on this undisputed record. We're arguing about the import of what these facts teach. And what the city is submitting, what we would submit to the court, is that what Winters, Crespo, Davis, and now Hertz teach is, on a record like this, where you have concessions from the plaintiff herself, that the only reason for avoiding what is otherwise a clear and obvious reasonable alternative path, the only reason for that is convenience, and that comes from the plaintiff's mouth. And there is no other evidence about the specific alternative path available to her in this case that would have impeded her progress through that path. Again, the only evidence here, she didn't want to get her feet wet.
Was she cross-examined about what she said at summary, what she said in the discovery stage, and what she said at trial?
She was not, Your Honor. This feeds into my point about this being a question of law for the court to decide. And this is our position.
Feeds into my question about how do you get to go back in time and rely upon a dispositive motion that was denied and say, yeah, but we need to consider that.
Right.
Consider it because it's inconsistent with what she said at trial, except what she said at trial was what she said at trial.
Well,
the case had already progressed to that point.
Right. Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Your Honor. There are two answers here again. I don't want to keep belaboring the point, but the first is that where an issue comes from an undisputed record and it should have been a question of law at the summary judgment stage, that decision does not merge into the trial decision and the verdict. That is a separate decision. And we argued that. We argued for reversal of the summary judgment decision at the directed verdict and post-trial stage that has been preserved. We would request that the court do that here because it was a legal issue then. That's the first answer. And Brunchan, we believe, supports that. The second answer is that at the trial stage, the burden remained with plaintiff to establish that there was a duty. And the only record evidence that we accept is plaintiff's testimony that she avoided the grass because she didn't want to get her feet wet. There were little bumps. And then the expert's testimony about plainer surfaces. And I would submit to the court that the deliberate encounter exception, I hesitate to call it rare, but it's close. It is a rarely invoked exception. It is usually in starkly different circumstances than this. Lefevre, which is the seminal case here, that's economic compulsion in a workplace where a person is required to take a specific path lest they lose their job. If we accept these facts, it is still on the plaintiff to take that exception from that unique and rare circumstance and apply it to her circumstance. It's her burden, and a burden remains with her. And that testimony we would submit, we don't dispute it. We would suggest that the import of that is insufficient to evoke the deliberate encounter exception. That is the thrust of our those that's the thrust of our two of our arguments, that it was a legal issue at every step, including at summary judgment. The court should go back and adjudicate on the summary judgment record. Even through trial, it remained an undisputed record. We have to accept what they have put forward in order to make that case, and that the court should reverse based on their failure to meet their burden of invoking the deliberate encounter exception at that point, because it was a legal issue that the court was required to make a finding on. It was not for the jury to consider at any point. And that's why it comes under de novo review. That's why it's for this court to make a decision now. We would submit that any other finding would effectively abdicate the court's role and give to the jury the duty of making a finding on the duty question that the jury was never supposed to have at any point. It was always for the judge to decide. And because it was always for the judge to decide, it is now for this court to decide. And on this record, it is abundantly clear that this rare and narrow exception, it does not apply. I know my time is running a bit short here. I want to bring the court's attention to something it just said in Hertz. This comes from paragraph 19 of Hertz. I think this gets at the thrust of what the deliberate encounter exception is all about. And what the court wrote is that in Illinois, for the deliberate encounter exception to apply, there must be, quote, some sort of driving force causing plaintiff to face the risk. Plaintiff Ingrid Gardner here has admitted in her deposition, Miss Gardner's she's a candid person. There's nobody from the city is interested in vilifying Miss Gardner. Miss Gardner has provided the evidence she provided. We're asking the court to make a finding. What Miss Gardner has effectively conceded, not effectively, what Miss Gardner has admitted, that there was no driving force forcing her to risk and hazard the cracked curb. What Miss Gardner has admitted is that she didn't use the grass parkway because it was more convenient to just use the other path. And there is black letter law saying that is insufficient to invoke the deliberate encounter exception, such that there should be no duty applied. I want to remind the court, we point this out in our brief, two things before I close here and turn it over to Mr. Rathsack. We rely heavily on three cases. I mentioned this in my opening. I'll mention it again. Those are Winters, Crespo, and Davis. We think all three are remarkably similar. We think Davis is particular. We talk a lot about Winters in our brief, and that is laid out with some force. We would encourage the court to look at Davis. In Davis, a woman had to take her teenage daughter to the pediatric ward, just like Miss Gardner had to go get her mail. People have to go do things. But once she got to the pediatric ward, plaintiff in Davis decided to park in a parking lot that was not suitable for motorcycles. She parked there anyway, and she got injured when she could have simply used another parking lot that was a minor inconvenience. Just like Miss Gardner here could have simply walked through the grass, even though she said it was a minor inconvenience. These cases are very close to being right on point. Plaintiff ignored them in the response brief. And the final point, and it's somewhat similar. This dispute we have, I don't call it a dispute, Justice Connacht, but the issue about question of law versus question of fact, this comes from plaintiff's brief. It comes from a case they relied on called Balog. It's a 2012 case from the Illinois Appellate Court. Balog does not say that the duty question and the deliberate encounter exception is normally a question of fact. Plaintiff says it does. That's not true. Balog quotes that from a decision called Simmons. And then in the next breath, Balog says that decision was overruled in a Supreme Court case called Choate. And normally, this is actually a question of law for the court to decide. This question of law, we would ask for the court to review it as such. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Soto. So you'll have time in rebuttal argument. Mr. Rasek, you may proceed with your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. As I said, my name is Michael Rasek. I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff appellee, Ms. Ingrid Gardner. And I'll start with the testimony from the expert, because I think it fits into what counsel was talking about. It wasn't simply an expert who said generally that people prefer level, planar surfaces to walk on. That answer was given in response to a question to the expert about whether the grass was an alternative route. And the answer was no, because people prefer planar level surfaces, i.e., in that case, actually, i.e., a walkway, a paved walkway. And the expert just didn't say that. He said that's the standard for providing access to areas through the ATSM standards. Everybody knows that people prefer that. And if that wasn't enough, I suggest that the common sense jury, common sense instruction that jurors get that tells them to use their common sense would let the jury determine whether or not a 79-year-old woman who they saw in the courtroom, I've not had the pleasure of meeting her, who they saw in the courtroom, watched her walk, watched her do it, would have some concerns about ever walking on the grass as opposed to going to her mailbox on the route she did, which would, of course, take her to the curb. And the Lefebvre case, that didn't come up in the opening argument here, the opening response, but Lefebvre very clearly says that whether or not the case should go to the jury is if there's going to be a dispute about what the person should have, what a normal, reasonable person would have done in terms of the landowner looking to see what these people would do. And if the fever wasn't enough, the Wright case we cited went further and said, you look to the nature of the act. They look to whether there's a dispute about the nature of the actions of the landowner. You don't look to the person who's using the property. And what we have here is when you look at the city, they knew people in their community had to be older. She's not the only 79-year-old person living in the community. They knew the curb was going to be cracked. The jury found against them on notice, and there's no issue about that. I mean, they always knew there was going to be notice because we knew that the patch was temporary. They admitted they knew it would fail probably within a year. When you combine all that together, the city had to appreciate the risk that one of their residents was going to walk down, prefer not to use the grass, and instead use the walkway. And it's not just me saying that grass might be dangerous. In the Marshall case, as we pointed out in our brief, the court pointed out that even though it was finding that people were intended and permitted uses of the walkway, it still didn't mean that residents of the community could assume that the parkway was a safe place to walk. It pointed out parkways are not always safe places to walk. That's where accidents happen. That's what happened in Marshall. That's where the accident happened. When all that is tied together, it simply created a question of fact for the jury. The trial court spent a great deal of time looking at the facts, talking about the law, and arrived at the same conclusion. That obviously isn't binding on this court, but you have a very detailed post-trial order from this judge setting everything up that he possibly could. The question about whether or not what the jurors should look at was taken care of in the jury instruction that nobody objected to. The jury instructions told the jurors that an issue was whether or not, I have to read it, the defendant could reasonably expect that a reasonable person in Ms. Gardner's position Knowing about the curb would proceed to encounter it because the advantage of doing so outweighed the risk. That's the law in Lefevre. That's the law that they applied here. That's what the jury got to do. They looked at all the evidence, most of it coming from the plaintiff side, as everybody has agreed to date, and said it was reasonable for her. We find it was reasonable for her to believe that walking on a paved surface was better. Obviously, as plaintiff's counsel told the jury in closing argument, at some point she was going to have to walk down that curb. If it was, we have winters, if I recall correctly, looking out my window here, there's snow on the ground. She's not going to be walking through the snow. At some point, she's going to be walking down the curb. The question was just which day was this accident going to happen? And it happened on this day, unfortunately, and unfortunately led to a serious injury. Unless the court has further questions, we have both, I think, exhausted our argued our positions exhaustively in our briefs. And that would be conclude my argument. We obviously ask that the court affirm the verdict.
All right, thank you, Mr. Rastak. Mr. Soto's rebuttal argument.
Yes, Ron, thank you. I know I only have 5 minutes. I want to acknowledge that I understand there was a jury verdict in this case. I understand that we are at a disadvantage. We are asking the court to take that verdict away and to do something that cuts against the grain of what we usually see in our adversarial system. But where a question of law exists and it requires a finding, it is a judge's job to do that. And that's the thrust of our appeal. We are asking the court to do what the law requires it to do, where there are no disputes in the record about the physical condition of a piece of property. And that is to find, as a matter of law, whether or not there is a duty. And in this case, that is determined by the deliberate encounter exception. I can't put it any other way than to say, if it is a question of law, the court must make a finding. And so we're asking the court to do that. A couple quick notes on what Mr. Ratzak said. I only spoke for 5 minutes. The planar surfaces testimony was in response to that question. Again, that testimony did not provide any information about this particular grass. We would encourage the court to make a finding in light of that testimony if it is inclined to go past the summary judgment record. Plaintiff's counsel invoked Marshall, mentions Marshall in his brief. This court just found last month in Hertz that a grass parkway, where there was no evidence in the record that the grass parkway was dangerous, was a reasonably alternative path, could not invoke the deliberate encounter exception because that grass parkway was available. The court just held that in Hertz. So the fact that there is bioorganic material in our world that does not exist on a perfect plane does not create an auto dispute every time a grass parkway is available for someone to walk across. People are expected to use them when they're safe in order to do things like access their mail. That's literally what Marshall held. We think Marshall supports our position. It doesn't cut against it. And then Mr. Ratzak mentioned the post-trial order, could have mentioned the summary judgment order too. The court there found, and I think Justice Kinect was hinting at this, that a reasonable jury could find that there could have been all manner of concerns in the grass that Ms. Gardner might have wanted to avoid because of that. I mentioned this in our initial argument. That's not what Ms. Gardner said. The court has Ms. Gardner's testimony. It has her own admissions about why she didn't go through the grass parkway. The lower court's presumptions about why she might have wanted to avoid the grass parkway, it doesn't jibe with the record. In fact, it contradicts the record because Ms. Gardner very candidly admitted she only avoided that grass parkway because to go through the dangerous condition was more convenient. And as I've said, Winters, Crespo, and Davis say that's not enough. Unless there are any other questions, I would conclude by asking the court to step in, find that there's an issue of law here, and as a result, do what is required in instances where there are issues of law and make a legal finding. And if that cuts against us, then so be it. But as we put out in our reply brief, that merits question is heavily avoided by plaintiff. Doesn't address Winters, Crespo, and Davis. She misstates the law governing that comes from Lefevre. She ignored a case called Hastings and cases that come through it. that have articulated how that the deliberate counterexception has developed. Plaintiff really wants this to be a question of fact. City submits it's not. It's a legal question, and the court should reverse and enter judgment for the city as a result, because there was no deliberate encounter exception here, such that no duty should be imposed on the city. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sotos. Thank you both. The court will take the case under advisement and will issue a written decision.